The following shiur has been presented by Rav Micha Cohen, Dayan at the Beis Havad Halacha Center.
For contract and iska draft and review, wills and estates, or other halachic services, please call 1-888-485-8223 or visit thehalachacenter.org.
The parshiyos that we find at the end of Sefer Shmos talk about the different vessels of the Mishkan as well as the garments that the kohen, that the priest would wear, the kohen hedges, the regular kohen, and the elaborate begadim, the elaborate garments that were worn by the kohen gadol, by the high priest. And one of the begadim, one of the pieces of clothing that was worn by the high priest, by the kohen gadol, was the me'il. The me'il was sky blue, it was made out of the tcheles, and at the bottom there were bells, and those bells would make noise as he would walk around and do his service and do his avodah. Chazal tell us that each of the begadim, each of the articles of clothing that the kohen gadol wore, atones for different things. The tzitz, the golden plate on his forehead, atoned for one thing. The other clothing for something else. The apron for something else. What was the significance? What was the thing that the me'il, this blue garment with the bells on the bottom, what was it that it atoned for? So Chazal tell us that it atoned for the sin of Lashon Hara, of evil talk. Why? Because the bells, they make noise. When people talk, they make noise. So therefore, it atoned for that sin. Now, the subject that I'd like to talk with you about for a few minutes is the idea in halacha of how we look at libel, how do we look at defamation, how do we look at when a person's name, a person's reputation is hurt and compromised by other people. How do we look at it as far as recourse, as far as getting a monetary payment from it? How do we look at it as far as stopping it in the first place? And perhaps more of a broader question, which is in general, how does halachic sources look at the whole concept of freedom of press? We know freedom of speech and freedom of press is from the basics of the American way of thinking, and it was very much a reaction to the way they were limited in the countries that they came from. And that, obviously, those experiences become very much embedded in the culture and in a set of values. And the question is, what do we find in halachic sources about these types of concepts? And as we all are aware of, there's a concept of lashon hara, of speaking evil about a person. So what's the balance between the laws of lashon hara and the idea that people should be able to express their opinions, their ideas? How do all these things fit together? So hopefully in a few minutes, I'll be able to share with you a few sources and a few thoughts that at least give you a little bit of a approach, a little bit of understanding of where, how we might view this according to the great halachic sources. Now, whenever we talk about damaging, so in Chazal, in the halachic concept, the obligation to damage, for to pay for damages, has to do with the relationship between the damage done and the person who did the damage. Meaning to say that if a person damages indirectly, then Chazal have a difficulty obligating the person to pay, especially if it's very indirect. And the reason is because there are a number of explanations given as to the mechanism of what causes, when I damage, what causes that I'm obligated to pay money. And especially, not only when I damage with my own hands, but when, say, with if something that belongs to me damages, say my animal, that was a very common problem, right? A person's ox would gore another ox or a person and cause damage. And the question becomes, why am I obligated for that? I didn't do the damage. My ox did it. So it's the fact that I own my ox. So therefore, but the ox acted out of its own instincts, right? So maybe because I should have watched it. This is a basic question that yeshiva students, when they learn the tractate of a kama, they talk a lot about, is niske mamon, the obligation to pay for what my ox or what my money, my possessions damage, right? What is that obligation? Is that an obligation because it's my money, so therefore it's an extension of myself, so it's like I damage? Well, the reason is because I should have watched it better. That's a discussion. But the point is that my obligation to pay has to be related to my action. So therefore, if I cause damage and it's very removed, known as grama or garmi, very indirect, so then I'm not going to be obligated. Now this creates a huge problem when it comes to the concept of mikti shem, of defamation, of libel. It comes to a tremendous problem. The problem is that if you look in the laws of chavala, of personal injury, so it talks there that if a person causes damage to another person, not only is he obligated to pay for the damage itself, but he's also obligated to pay for any embarrassment that was caused through it. However, embarrassment needs intent, but besides intent, it needs to come through an action. And the reason is because, again, in order for me to be obligated to something that I do, it needs to have an action. So therefore, if a person defames someone, right, he puts an article in the paper, he puts something on the internet about the person, and it ruins his life in a tremendous way, but words, at least in Chazal, is not really an action. And therefore, where is the causation, where is the relationship between the damage done and what he did? And just to bring it out in another way, what happens? This person posts this thing about this individual that he's not competent, and it's not true, it's a lie, right? And therefore, it gets passed on, three hands down, and therefore, someone doesn't give him a job because of it. Someone fires him. So now, it's sort of difficult to say that I put it in one place, and it went from one place to the next. So therefore, it's very difficult to say that person's decision to fire is my direct action. It's, at least from a very simple sense, it's very much removed. So how do we look at it? Now, if you look in Shulchan Aruch and the laws in these halachas, so it says the following. When Shulchan Aruch writes, Bishay bedvarim, one who embarrasses a person with only words, so there's no action, pater, the Torah obligation to pay for embarrassment, he does not have, because he didn't do an action. However, the Shulchan Aruch continues, V'yesh lebezdin b'chol malkam b'chol zman ligdar kafish mashiyu. However, it's upon Bezdin in every situation to deal with the issue, meaning to enact laws and regulations, what we know as takonas, to deal with this problem. So if there's a problem, people are besmitching other people's reputations, so then they should enact decrees and edicts that would make fines and different types of laws, as we have today, for these types of things. And some say, and this is very prevalent if you look in the Darkei Moshe, which was one of the important glosses onto the Shulchan Aruch, onto the tour, written by Rabbi Moshe Israelis. He lived in Krakow in the 1500s. And he brings over there a whole slew of different responsa from the different Gedolim of over the last a few hundred years about different cases where people ruined people's reputation, and what they did was they would put the person in excommunication and say no one can deal with this person unless he placates the individual that had it done to them. So he has to give them some sort of money. Hagah, and the Ramah continues and says, V'yesh arim demakan esay makas mardas, that even he would get some sort of corporal punishment, even though it's not the Torah form of malchus, but it's a rabbinic form. Now, if you look further in the Shulchan Aruch, it says, "Afal pi shemavayish b'dvarim eino bar tashlumin." Even though one is not obligated to pay money in the simple sense, "Afan gadolhu," it's a great sin. "Vein hamachar magadif la'am umavayishim el shayte rasha v'gasruach." It says of someone who does such a thing is a terrible person, and he doesn't have a share in the world to come. This is what the Shulchan Aruch says. I'd like to delve deeper into this, and also in the context of some of the responses that's being quoted here, and to understand the structure that Chazal are giving. In other words, Chazal by no way wanted to undermine the severity of ruining the person's reputation. The issue is, does the regular structure put in place by the Torah in the Parshas Mishpatim, where it speaks about personal injury, does that structure deal with defamation and libel or not? And the answer is that it doesn't. And it doesn't because those obligations are for direct actions. This is not a direct action. However, when we talk about different ways that people cause damage to another person, there are two aspects of it. There's the monetary obligation to pay, but there's the iser, there's the prohibition involved. Because it's wrong to cause a person embarrassment. And not only that, but we know that the Gemara says that one who embarrasses a person is like killing them, to the point that there's a response, there's a discussion from the Binyan Sin who wants to know that we know that one of the three cardinal sins is not killing. So therefore, what if a person says, we're going to take your life unless you embarrass this person? So there are those that want to say that if embarrassing is like killing, so therefore you're not allowed to do it, and you have to let your life be taken. Now, many disagree with that and say it's taking a little bit too far. But the point is that by no means does the Torah and the halachic sources take lightly embarrassing a person. The issue is more, how do you and what's the category that you put it into? Is it a regular, what we call like a tort? Is it a regular damage? Or is it something different? And what we see over here is that it's something different. And the reason is because just like, say, in secular law, you have a tort, and you have laws of damages, and then you have a criminal law, right? So a crime is something that you're being prosecuted, not necessarily by the person who was damaged, but by the state, because we have an obligation to prosecute people that commit crimes. If there's a murder, the person's not here to bring you to court. And even if there's no family, but the state will prosecute you because you did something wrong, and for the betterment of society, we have to make sure that this gets taken care of. Now, in a similar way, in halacha, we have things that are chayshimish, that are actual damages, that we damage each other, and therefore you have a right to ask me for payment. And then we have other things that it's simply something in wrong. If a person desecrates the Shabbos, so Beis Din will deal with that. And why? Because it's inherently wrong, nothing to do with another person. So therefore, a person who embarrasses someone else, it's a very serious sin, but it doesn't fall into the regular category of personal injury. It's more something severe, like other types of sins, like a ben adam lamakom type of sin, where it has its intrinsic severity, but it may not follow the regular laws of damages where the way it's dealt with is through payment. And this is what we see over here. It says over here that an opinion that the person gets corporal punishment. Now, if my ox goes and damages you, I'm not going to get corporal punishment. Why? Because I didn't do a sin. I didn't do something that's intrinsically wrong. Maybe I was negligent, but therefore there's a monetary obligation that I have to pay you. Over here, I did something intrinsically wrong, so therefore there's a criminal case against me, so to speak, that I did something wrong, and therefore I may deserve to have a corporal punishment because of the wrong I did, regardless of paying money or not paying money. So that's number one. The point is that the structure of these ideas, it doesn't fall into the regular category of damages, but it falls into a category of more like other types of serious offenses that are not considered a monetary obligation. Now, having said that, as you know, history took its course and there were real issues, now obviously something had to be done for these things. And now one of the approaches was corporal punishment. Okay, that maybe works or doesn't work, but also there's an issue here that there is a damage and we want to try to rectify the damage. Now, what we get to over here is a very important distinction, and it's something very fundamental to understanding many aspects in halacha and Jewish law, especially when it comes to Chai Shemish, but the different legal issues. And that is that there are really two sources of law. Meaning to say, there are sources of law that are intrinsic, that the Torah says that if your ox damages, if it's a tom, if it hasn't done three times, you pay half, and if it does three times, you pay whole. And if we understand that or do not understand it, it makes no difference, but that is the halacha, and it doesn't change right? There's halacha that says, the shmirah bevailim, if I'm working for someone, and at the same time, they're watching my item, using my item, so they're not obligated on certain things. Now, you could explain that logically, or it could be not explained logically, but these are laws that makes no difference in different situations, a different time in history. Those laws will always remain the same. But, just, there is the ability for a governing body, whether it's a Besdin, whether it's a communal council like they had in Europe and other places for hundreds of years, or whether it's perhaps a secular government, according to some opinions, depending on how you understand different forms of government. But there's a time and a place for enacting regulations, and halacha recognizes the need to enact regulations in order to deal with a specific problem. For example, the Torah talks about the laws of Aino, not to overcharge. Now, overcharging is something that you're not allowed to do, regardless of whether or not, it's hurting society or not hurting society. Just because you can make a few more dollars and people could afford it, it's still going to be prohibited. Charging interest, ribbis, is still going to be a problem, even if people want to charge the interest. However, there is a concept, so I'll say hafkos sharm, the people jacking up the prices and they're doing it collectively, so it's not going to be a problem if I know. We're not going to explain that now, but the point is that all the merchants get together and they jack up the prices, so the market price goes up higher. So the halacha is that if they're doing it on staple items, like food, then we have a right to stop them. Now, that is something that's situational, that depending on the situation, people could afford the food even with the higher price, then it's okay. That's something that's going to vary from time to time. So here also, there's a concept of enacting knosis, enacting penalties, in order that the person should placate the person whose reputation was ruined. But it's something that was more situational. You know, if it's something happening 2 months, it might make it more expensive. If it only happened one time, it may make it less. You know, but that's something that's going to be situational. Now, when the Shulchan Aruch HaRav brings this concept, he writes that who has the ability to make these enactments? So he says that the Zayin Tuvair, the seven elders of the city. And the reason is because what is the structure? Who has the ability to make these extra regulations? And the answer is it has to be a body that's empowered to govern. So therefore, if it's an elected body that their job is to see to the welfare of the city, so they have the ability to make these extra regulations. Whereas if they don't have that, then because it's not brought in halacha, such a concept, or it's fluid, it's not clear, so they wouldn't have that ability. Now, what it seems from the Paiskim is that it already became an accepted practice that basically the person who ruined the other person's reputation has an obligation to placate them. That's what it seems to be. And again, that's something that's not a set value. Right? You have one guy says he's a nice guy. He says, listen, what happened, don't do it again, and give me this amount of money. You have another person who's not going to accept that number and want to take much more. But the point is that it's something that's not set in stone. It's not like when you damage someone, there's a way of determining the value, and that's what we have to pay, regardless of the situation. That's what you have to pay. This would be different. So that's the basic structure of how Chazal, of how the Paiskim, the halachic sources, that they looked at libel, they looked at ruining someone else's name, that it's not an intrinsic obligation to make money, but there is an ability for Besdin and for people who have the power to deal with the issue to make the person placate the person whose reputation was ruined, and that amount of money is going to depend on the situation. Now, this is a discussion about what has happened already. Now, what about stopping it from happening? Now, as we know, ruining a person's reputation is a terrible thing. And even though it may be indirect, but first of all, it's still wrong. So therefore, Besdin has the ability, the right, to stop a person from doing something that's wrong. That's number one. So therefore, if you know this person's going to publish a book and it's going to write terrible and not true things about a person, if you know about it before it happens, then you'd be able to go to Bezdin or to go to a governing body, and they would tell the person that they have to stop. And the reason is because since they're doing something wrong by publishing it, then you could stop them. Now, we also find this concept that even though there are certain types of damages, let's say when one neighbor is too close to the other one, they're their property and they do certain things, that's indirect, and they might not be obligated to pay after the fact, but you could stop them from before the fact because it's prohibited to damage a person even indirect. So again, the fact that you might have not have a recourse to get money for it doesn't mean that a person's allowed to do it in the first place. So therefore, to stop it from happening, that's going to be different. That's going to be much easier to do than afterwards how much you have to pay. But again, if it does happen, then if it could be proven and there was clear malice involved, then they would have an obligation to pacify the person who had this done to them. Now, just to talk for a minute about the idea of Lashon Hara versus freedom of speech. So it's a much longer discussion, maybe for a different time, but I'd like to point out that Lashon Hara is permitted if it's a Lita Elis, it's for a purpose. And the question is, what's called a purpose? That's number one. Now there are things that are obviously inherently very, not true and very damaging. Now, there are things that are just information, right? Information that people might want to keep personal. Now, we know in secular law, there's a concept of, let's say, a person's a celebrity. They're very well known. So the person of the public has a right to know more about them. And also, by taking that office, you're sort of understanding that you're going to be looked at and your life is going to, your personal life is going to become more public. Now, in halacha, we find two interesting things. First of all, we find there's a small piece from the Shvus Yankiv written in the 1700s about reading a newspaper on Shabbos. And he writes that perhaps one will be allowed to read it because there's knowledge that a person needs to know what's going on in the world, and that might help him. You hear that a war is going on in a distant country, so you might be able to put together something to help out the people over there, something like that. Now, having said that, people in public office, especially if the model is that they're representing the people and people they have to be voted in, so in a way the people have a right to know certain things about them. Again, if it's not true, if it's that's something else. But one could argue that, so the question really is, we know Lashon Hara is prohibited if it's for no purpose, if it's just gossip, but if it's for a purpose, it is prohibited. So now, it's going to be a judgment call. A lot of these things, is it important for people to know them or not? To say that there's an inherent right to people have to say anything and everything, that's obviously going to be a problem from a halachic perspective. That's called rechilus, right? But if there is somewhat of value, especially if the thing is not blatantly, defaming the person, but it's simply a fact, maybe it's well known already, or maybe it's, and especially something that the public should be aware of, then that would be probably more of a different story. Finally, there's another idea, and that is mentioned by Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky and mentioned by Rabbi Waldenberg, the Tzitzel Yezer. That is the following. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was asked the question whether or not it's permitted to write a book review. And the argument is, if you're going to criticize the book, then you're going to hurt the author. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky says a very logical idea. He says, when a person writes a book, if I write a book and I don't want anyone to criticize it, so what I should do is I should print one copy, and I should keep it in my night table and keep it for myself, right? Maybe I'll give it to a few friends who I know like me, right? But if I publish a book for the whole world, then obviously I want everyone to read it, and I'm lending myself to their opinions. So therefore, once I'm doing it, I'm willfully asking people to give their opinions. So if a book reviewer wants to do it, then he has the right to do it, because that was the purpose of writing a book. Now, obviously, he can't write things that are not true. He can't go overboard, right? But the very fact that a person, that he's writing criticism, is not wrong, because unlike a regular individual, this person by putting his ass thing for the public, intending that to happen. In a similar way, Waldenberg talks about a person going to a doctor, or let's say a resident working under the tutelage of another doctor, and he has to write a report about how this person's doing. Or say a person goes to a doctor's office and, you know, the secretary sees the records, and maybe we would rather the secretary not knowing about it. And the Tzitzel writes a very similar idea to Rabbi Yankel Kamenetsky, and he writes that because a person understands that when I'm going to work for this doctor, when I'm a resident, he's going to write a report about me. That's part of the job, right? When I go to the doctor, I don't expect the doctor is going to file all the medical files by himself. So obviously I understand that the secretary is going to do it. Now maybe I'd rather it not happen, but once I'm putting myself willfully in that situation, so it's different. So what we do see here is, you know, when it comes to, freedom of press and speech to say whatever you want about whomever, whatever comes to your mind, halakhically has a problem with that. That's obviously wrong. It has to be a ta'alus. How do you define ta'alus? That's going to be subjective. It's a matter of discussion. But when it's dealing with a person who puts themselves in the public light, then it's going to be easier to say that it's permitted to reveal certain facts and discuss certain things. Because if by the very nature of them, say running for political office or occupying certain types of positions, it shows that there's an understanding there of what they're getting themselves into, then that will be easier than, say, reporting or writing about a private person. There's a lot more to discuss, but I think this at least gives a few basic concepts as far as what the halachic structure of how they look at libel is, that it's not a regular form of damage. It's something very terrible, but sort of is dealt with more on a case-by-case basis, and it's more something that has to be regulated in each situation, in each period in history. Another idea that publishing something would have to come out to, if it has something that could be considered derogatory, it would have to have either a ta'alus, have to have a real purpose, and if it's the person involved seemingly put themselves in that situation knowingly and willingly, then that could be a reason to say why it would be more permitted than say a case that was not the case.
The Beis Havad on the Parsha series has been brought to you by the Halacha Center.